Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Today we're going to talk about product-led growth, which is an incredibly strong go-to-market strategy for many, many companies, if and only if they get it right. So that is what we're going to talk about today. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and I'm going to be joined by a couple people here who I'll introduce in just a second to talk about how to get product-led growth right. So Joel is a designer, entrepreneur, and 4X founder. At his core, he's a restless problem solver and entrepreneur focused on humanizing software products and business. He's also a strategist and researcher experienced with UX research and design, product management, market research, and product-led growth. And he's also a product and strategic coach with Dan Martell's SaaS Academy, leveraging what he knows and loves to help SaaS founders discover how to design their growth, putting customers, aka people, at the heart of their business and products. And then we've got Vanessa as well. Vanessa is a lead strategic coach with Can I say coach? I'm also a coach and I can't say the word coach. Vanessa is a lead strategic coach with SaaS Academy, which with at least 500 coaching calls in the last few years. She has bootstrapped, scaled, and sold companies in the US, Argentina, and Brazil, as well as led 2 turnarounds to position for acquisition. As the founder of Domni, she helps CEOs scale profitable, customer-centric companies, one customer, aka human, at a time, by designing exceptional out-of-the-box experiences. She believes delivering unrivaled value via customer success is the key to achieving a dominant market position and maximum valuation. So Joel Smith and Vanessa Roberts, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Awesome.
Cool. So to start us off, guys, let's talk about just what is product-led growth? What are we even talking about here?
Yeah, that's a big question. It's not without, like, people are going to hear our definition and they're going to have tons of different ways to perceive it. But, I'm going to kind of talk about what I think it is. What I think it is kind of like how you said, it's a go-to-market strategy. But instead of leveraging sales and marketing as the primary acquisition channel for the product, it's the product itself that is the primary driver of adoption and retention. So leading with retention. So I think in its most simplistic form, when people are thinking about product-led, right? Like there's this notion of try before you buy, right? There's some aspect of free, and they'd be right. But once you start digging in and you start pulling back the layers and you start, like, all the systems and mechanisms it takes to really deliver on this go-to-market strategy becomes a lot more complex. Hopefully we get to talk about that a little bit about today. And one of the other pieces of product-led growth, beyond the try before you buy is viral loops. It's the virality. It's about using your product to create feedback loops that make it easier to increase the value for the customer and generate growth and revenue at the same time, generate growth and revenue for the business.
Very cool. So tell us what most companies that you see out there are getting wrong today with their product-led growth.
Yeah, so I've got a few here. So I think the biggest one with product-led growth, and again, like, you have to imagine, like, it's a go-to-market strategy where there's no human at the front, right? So the idea, design becomes way more important. And so not prioritizing the user experience is a death knell in a sense. The product, you have to show, don't tell in this case. Show, don't tell. Yeah, you got to demonstrate the value of the product. And being intentional intentional about the design so that the value of the product comes alive for the customer is very key. The viral aspect of it is often missed and it becomes sort of an afterthought. So again, it's about these feedback loops in the product. Show, don't tell should be the central principle in designing the business and the product. It's hard to talk about viral without talking about value. The value of your product has to have a viral element that wants to pull other people into it. And we can get a little bit more into that later down the road. The other thing is not understanding the job to be done. And it was so awesome that I saw like you had an episode on jobs to be done. This is really central. Product led is about helping people achieve goals. Not so much about like, what are the cool features that we can bring to market? It's like the question is, how can I help somebody achieve a goal? And oftentimes what's driving conversions in the product led is not a function of, you know, hiccups or problems in the marketing funnel or friction in the sales process. It's that we're not understanding. It's like those things are operating outside of the context in which our customers are operating. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like we're trying to bring things that don't really align with what they're trying to achieve. So the job to be done is huge. And then the other piece is not understanding the engagement of core product action. So as we mentioned before in my bio, like I'm a coach. Vanessa and I both are coaches at SaaS Academy, and it is a common blind spot of these businesses that, you know, are at 3 million, 5 million ARR and still don't know what parts of their product are valuable to their customers. There's features sometimes that they don't even know that people aren't using. And so it becomes cruft in the user experience. And so it becomes a real blocker to scale when you can't tell the story about like why certain aspects of your product matter. And so knowing what those key workflows and tasks are really key.
Very cool.
I would add on to that of just what Joel said is also right with the product roadmap is they'll come and Joel and I both do a strategic game plan. So when somebody comes into SaaS Academy, take a look at their entire business and what are the opportunities and challenges. And many times it's like, oh, I've got this, you know, huge backlog. We've got to get all this stuff done. And then when we dive down and start really looking at, okay, you know, what does your product really do? Who is it for? And who specifically, we can talk about this a little bit as well, right? The whole perfect fit customer, you know, going beyond personas, beyond avatar, but when we start really drilling down about who is the best customer that we can serve up the most value, then most of that backlog just goes away. Then they have a very clear line of sight of what they need to do next when it comes to product and then what, you know, which customers they can immediately go to, you know, for that feedback, you know, for that referral, like starting to, they get unstuck. It's a pretty big revelation. It always goes back to that perfect fit customer, which I think we can't drill that down enough. And we'll talk about it more throughout our call. But that roadmap too gets unblocked once you have those conversations.
Got it. So why would a product company choose to really kind of go with the product led go to market strategy as opposed to having marketing or sales leading that go to market?
Yeah. So again, so there's some natural scale and virality to a product led approach. So when you're factoring in what's going to help my product grow or how I'm going to acquire customers, you're baking in, those mechanisms into the core product experience. We've got a small framework on how you can start to identify that for your product that I can share. That is key. And that is key to the bigger sort of piece here is that like we're helping people achieve their goals in as frictionless sort of manner as possible. So it helps, it sort of makes a more efficient path to their goal, to reaching their goal, if that makes sense.
I think also, I mean, we've seen across the board too, no matter if you're serving SMBs all the way through enterprise, right? The cost to acquire a customer has just gone up significantly, right? ProfitWell says over 50% in the last 50 years, or excuse me, last 5 years, 50 years, definitely. But
it wouldn't be so bad. Yeah.
SaaS has been around for a while.
Yeah. and so, you know, just always battling. I mean, even in the last, you know, year, we've seen, you know, huge changes and just a lot of the platforms, a lot of the marketing and growth channels. And then also just obviously like looking at the full value cycle and how you can create just constantly going between product, customer, creating that loop, creating that feedback loop, that flywheel, we like to say, that creates momentum. Is just a much more cost-effective, it's a more profitable way to fuel growth. So it's something that, right, should be more intuitive and automatic since we are in the recurring revenue business with SaaS. I mean, it's inherent in the business model, but you know, just the thought of that first initial sale, right, as we're starting to grow companies and then just getting stuck in that, you know, funnel, right, top of funnel, and really you know, overloading it at the top versus saying, okay, how can this really cycle, how can we really create momentum, you know, and then focus on the product, customer, and then allow that to enable marketing and sales is something that I think on the surface is much it's simple to understand, but it's more complex to actually implement.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a stab at walking through this step-by-step framework then. So yeah, walk us through, if you were kind of building this out from scratch, thinking about all of those pieces that you'd want in place, where would you start?
I think there's tons of places. Sarah, if I like, because I have so much thoughts on this, like this might get complex really fast. So if I start to get complex, like pull me out, be like, Joel, okay. Like, that alert. Okay. So I, you know, it's sort of the, so number one is the user experience above everything, right? There's no, you can add sales and marketing on top of this, but, you know, to make things, you know, as fuel to the fire, but like, if we're starting out, right, we have to identify, like we have to be thinking self-service. How do we enable self-service? So, the user experience has to be, the most important thing. And what I mean by that is, I think, so number one, what comes to mind is like onboarding. Onboarding has to be like no friction. Like I need to get people to value as in the shortest path possible. The other part of that is what your feature set is. So the user experience that you create around features that will fuel retention. And so I kind of break these down into two areas. So this is taken from a model by Sarah Tavel. She was at Greylock Partners on her hierarchy of engagement. So there's, when you're thinking about features for your product, there are features that accrue benefits. So that means that the more that someone uses the product, the better it gets. So for example, like think about like Google Drive. you've got more people on it. It enhances the value that you have, the value that you have, because I am collaborating around documents. And so the more people that are on the platform, the more valuable it gets. And also the more documents that you create, the more valuable it gets, right? So what features inside your product and what UX you design around those features that they're accruing benefits. And then the other side of that is how do you create mounting losses? So how do you make it painful or hard for people to switch away from the product? So for example, we can use Google Drive again, is that you start creating assets inside of Google Drive and, you know, all of the ancillary products like, you know, Google Sheets and what's the word? I'm sitting here looking at it. What's this called?
Slides?
Google Docs. Google Docs. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Google Docs. You got all these things that you come back to. Mm-hmm. What do you do when you want to switch away? Right? Like all that stuff is in there. I've been paying for Evernote for 10 years. I haven't used it in the past three because like I've got years and years and years of like journal entries and like notes and I have no idea what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So accruing benefits, mounting losses, design amazing UX around those things and frictionless onboarding. The other notion is building for viral growth. Viral growth is when people are causing the spread of your product while they're using it. So viral products aren't the ones that are built for just one user. Like think about Zoom, we're on Zoom right now. I cannot use this product without another user in it. I can't experience the value. So there's inherent virality to that. Closely related, but not the same is word of mouth, right? And word of mouth is extremely powerful. But word of mouth is when people love it so much that they can't stop talking about it, right? And so those are two different things, but they're both really good things to have. But viral growth is a distinctive quality, and from a product-led business. And that's the other thing is that viral growth is a business design issue. It's not just like, hey, this is a feature I'm going to throw into my product. And actually, I have like a four facet framework to this. So when you're thinking about adding in value into their product, you need to spark, share, spread, and sample. So spark is why will customers engage with non-customers and the product, right? So Google Drive is an example, or Google Docs is an example. I need to have other people in here. We need to collaborate on this. So they spark that really well. What share is what are the mechanisms that I'm building into my product to pull those non-customers into the product, right? So that big old share button, you know, at the top of the Google Docs is the mechanism. That's how we share. Spread is how is the product positioned with non-customers, right? So when they get that email that, hey, someone wants to collaborate with you from Google Docs, right? That positions it for that non-customer. And then sample is how will the non-customers convert using the product, right? So they get to get in there. They don't have to sign up for a Google account in order to, you know, if your sharing settings are right, but to they don't necessarily have to. So they get to sample the product without even being a customer yet. And so like the very spark, share, spread, and sample as a way to kind of quick way to start thinking about virality for your product. And then the last piece of the viral growth is harnessing the power of free. There's nothing more powerful than free. And it breaks through the noise. You've got to figure out some way to make your product free, whether it's through a freemium offering where, you know, it can be, you can use like a certain portion of the features for free, but then you have to upgrade to pro, you know, to get the rest, to unlock the rest of the value. Or it could be a trial, right? Whether, you know, you can try this for a few days, 7, 14, 30 days, whatever. Or a combination of both. There's a lot of products that do both. The other thing to do, and I, like I said, this is going to be a lot. The other thing is understanding the job to be done. Study how and why people switch and adopt the products in your category. It's a really interesting field of study called choice economics. It's the way people make understanding how people weigh different options and how they make decisions. Jobs to be done is an amazing framework for understanding the choice economics at play from when somebody is doing, when they're switching from an old way of doing things to doing things in a new way. And in a product-led growth, your job is to help people on that journey to achieve what those goals are and understanding the forces that are acting on them as they evolve from status quo, which is painful if they're choosing to go on this journey, to a new way of doing things. And I think the gentleman that you had on doing jobs to be done back in, I think, October was an awesome, you know, exposure to that. The other thing about jobs to be done that is amazing is that you connect deeper with people because you're communicating them based on their activities and how those activities line up with the goals that they have for themselves. versus labeling them based on like their gender, age, attributes that really have no causal impact on how I'm making a decision. So using Jobs to Be Done to understand why people switch products. And then the last piece, I think, to start doing this right is knowing the engagement of those core value producing workflows inside your product. These are the tasks and workflows in your product that cause retention. Mm-hmm. So implementing micro surveys, which are tiny little tiny little surveys that can be completed less than 2 minutes that are embedded inside those key workflows. So for example, a really short one is like asking somebody, is like, hey, when they get toward the end of the workflow, say, hey, were you able to finish what you came to do today? And if not, what were you trying to accomplish? Right. And imagine you've got 1,000 users answering those questions every single day within a very contextualized spot inside your product. You can start to get a lot of insight, not only for product and how to optimize it, but then understanding why this thing matters to fuel marketing and fuel sales conversations, et cetera. And then the product analytics is quantifying the engagement of those core actions. How big of an opportunity do we have, or how big of a problem do we have? It's about quantifying the impact. Whereas the qualitative, the micro surveys and user interviews are more about the what and the why.
Hmm. Very interesting. So tell me how pirate metrics factor into the product led strategy.
Yeah. So again, like when we're coaching our founders at SaaS Academy, I think oftentimes like they sort of are builders and they kind of like back into amazing businesses and they're so close to what they're trying to build, it's hard to like pull out and kind of see the business holistically. And so one of a framework that I refer to a lot in my coaching calls is the pirate metric framework. And what it is a mental model for basically building a simple dashboard across all the different stages that a customer goes through with your product. And there's 5 stages. First stage is acquisition. So when you're coming up with this, and Vanessa was sharing with me that when she first adopted Pirate Metrics, she simply built a keynote deck that just like she updated every week and she shared with the team. And so she had 5 stages. So she identified metrics and the acquisition stage. So these are metrics around how you acquire customers and how customers find you. So this could be like website hits. These could be, you know, how many leads came in through a specific channel. Activation is the next, is like, how well are you giving, how well are you doing, how well are you giving an initial great experience to the product? So how awesome, like how many people signed up for a free trial? How many people converted from a free trial to pay? How many people completed onboarding within that? Revenue is how do you get free and trial customers to convert to being paid? So like what features are they using inside of the product? How many times did you have to reach out to them before they finally like put in their credit card or activated the free, the paid parts of their account? Retention is how do you repeatedly bring back people to your product? What features are highly correlated, and you can get this through your product analytics, are highly correlated with people coming back. How often are they using those? One of the really powerful frameworks that we use at SaaS Academy is the cancellation capture system, which is when people cancel the product, it's a form that they go through to collect feedback so that we can optimize the product and tell better stories, make better promises, et cetera, right? So like those kind of numbers can get caught in there. And then referral is like the metrics that you're tracking on how well you're turning happy retained customers, how you're getting them to tell others about you, right? So this brings in sort of the viral piece. It brings in the word of mouth. How often are people sharing the product? How at what rate are, you know, if I'm Google Drive or Google Docs, how often are people sharing documents to, you know, to non-customers, right? And so like, that's it. Acquisition, activation, revenue, retention, referral. R is the is the acronym there. That's hence Pirate Metrics. And it's an amazing model to pull everybody in, right? So for each one of these, acquisition, activation, revenue, you could look at design, engineering, customer success, sales, marketing, and they might have, like, as they think about their impact across that entire customer journey, you know, they could have impact on all of that, right? And so this becomes like a mental model to pull and collaborate with the entire team, so that we're all working together to produce revenue, you know, to impact revenue and growth.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I know, Joel, you're kind of an expert on those first three kind of pieces, or rather the acquisition and the activation pieces of that overall kind of framework. And Vanessa, you have a ton of experience working with customers on kind of the latter half, walking from revenue and then incorporating customer success and all these things into the referral engine, the renewal engine, all of that stuff. So I'd love for you to walk us through first, Joel, through those first two steps in terms of kind of that customer journey through the product, how best to move people through each of these stages of the Pirate Metrics framework.
Absolutely. So the first stage is acquisition, right? And the notion here is that we have to be purposeful about connecting with our perfect fit customer. And that is the things that have impact on that are the channels that we use to find customers, beyond sort of the viral nature of our product, which is should be one of the most important channels, but like, how do you find net new customers outside of that? The positioning, like, how are you connecting emotionally with those people? So like, going back to the job to be done and understanding that I'm helping people achieve a goal, right? I need to like hit my numbers, but I need to connect with pain. I need to connect with this customer's goal, and sort of the website, the channels, the ads, right? Like all of those pieces sort of fit in and connecting emotionally with that customer. And then the activation is a very, this is where you create fans, right? So this has to be a very powerful step in getting customers to first value. And what I mean by that is like, you can have people sign up on the website, right? And that sign up could, you know, be an indicator that you're growing. But the main predictor of growth is, am I delivering on what I said I was going to deliver? And so that's what the free trials and like leveraging the power of free does is, whatever the context of that free experience, I'm getting them to confirm for themselves that I made a great choice by investing my time and adopting this product, and it's actually helping me on my journey to switching and adopting a new way of doing things. The other piece of that, so designing the free trials or the freemium model or the free trial, whatever you've got, is really important. So that free aspect is important. The other important aspect is, what is an activated customer? And an activated customer is a result of great onboarding. So onboarding is getting people to a magic moment or an aha moment or a light bulb moment as efficiently as possible, so that they can start to build momentum and them adopting that product so that they keep coming back. So I think oftentimes I see a lot of companies try and treat onboarding and try to use a lot of onboarding to like create product experts. Like, they need to know all of the different features, all of the different things about the product, when really onboarding is about chaining together these moments early in the process of clarity and value to help them convince themselves that they made the right choice to invest their time and energy and money, because you're going to ask them to convert and put put their money where their mouth is. You need to provide that value first. And so onboarding is the measure is the process of delivering on that chain of moments.
Absolutely. And Vanessa, what happens next with the revenue stage?
Well, so revenues that I look at, right, the goal here is predictable revenue, right? It's why we're here. And so obviously, revenue comes from your pricing, it comes from your packaging, it comes from your plans. But what I want to have everyone think about is, really that predictability. How do we also make it productive so it can really, it's used really efficiently? And how then it's distributed across the company, and then obviously that it's profitable. So then we're just using it in different ways. We're leveraging it in different ways, whether you have your subscription fees, which we're in SaaS, so everyone obviously should have a recurring model, but then there's going to be, depending on the customer needs, again, going back to what is their specific situation. Is there setups involved? Is there special implementation, right? Are there ongoing services, transactional value? We're seeing more and more companies come in that have a transactional component, and that's going to really kind of define, okay, what is then the next plan or the next flywheel that you're going to set up? Then you can continue around with the customer in order to say, okay, here's the plan. We're going to generate these different moments of value. We're going to review these during our business reviews. And then we're going to look at, okay, now how do we, it's part of the land and expand, right? How do we now expand that value as part of retention in your cross sells, your upsells, your additional value that that you can generate? And I think that when we think about, or going back to pirate metrics, right? So yes, in the very simplest form, this is, years ago, probably a decade ago, looking at pirate metrics and how we would record it, just as that simple baseline, just to get an idea of like where to start, just to, five metrics, and then having obviously ratios and percentages. So we knew, are they going up or are they going down? How do we need to look at this? It was very linear. And I think what we need to do is say, okay, again, what is the flywheel? How do we create momentum with this? So we want to look at pirate metrics as a cycle. And then if you look at a flywheel, like an actual, in a machinery, it's going to have additional flywheels in it, and it's going to have sub flywheels. And I think, around the pirate metrics and in there, that's where you can also, build off of your activation, then you can go into your adoption, your advocacy, and then advancement. How are you really advancing? So Joel talked about the initial goals of the customer, which is really important to focus on, right? What's that first moment of value? What's that fastest moment of value? But then beyond that, like, how are you really influencing? How do you access and how do you really influence the customer or really the person that you're engaging with? And, especially now, software is usually bought with multiple, people in mind. So it's really which person at which point, of the flywheel are you engaging with? But how are you advancing that, right? What is next for them in building those goals? So it's not just a review of, which features did, they take advantage of or which are they missing, but really what are they trying to achieve and what are their numbers? So we have our own internal metrics that we're looking at as a company, but it's really important to understand the metrics of the customer and who and what are they accountable to. That's going to obviously, help with that retention when you have those conversations, not when, their annual contract's about due or after they've churned, right? That's why we also set up the cancellation capture system. But ideally, even before that, we have some monitoring in place and we know what those overall goals are. So when I look at retention, it's looking, I like to call it positioned retention as well, because it does speak back to, the front end acquisition of who are we positioning for, right? If we're trying to kind of save a customer, right, or pray that they're going to stay, where it's way too late. We need to go, you know, upstream or at the top of the flywheel when the flywheel is starting to get going, to say, okay, how can we position, and this goes back to the conversation with sales and marketing, is let's get the right people that we can really serve and really help advance in first. And then from there, we can look at, okay, what is their plan, you know, kind of flip it, you know, what is the plan that they need? What is the specific pathway that's going to help get them there? And then what's next as far as what are the clear plays that they need to make in order to really move their organization and to their company forward? So this is where also the CS team and the product team can pull those case studies, right? Pull, and that can all be used for that enablement of marketing and sales. We've all heard it, right? People like to buy from those that they know, like, and trust. And that is not you as a company, right? That is your customers that they can say, that is my situation, right? That is what's keeping me up at night. So how, you know, how can you tell those stories? You know, it is numbers, but it's also the narrative around those numbers to really then help support, you know, even your new customers coming in, but then say, okay, now this is the path. We have a plan for you. Product is so important, but it also, right, it's product. It can't be alone in this conversation. And I think that customers are really looking at companies, and this is really the role within customer success, of really being that trusted advocate, right? Or that domain expert, or and many actually in SaaS Academy, most of our members are bootstrapped. You know, obviously we've expanded. We have, you know, many now that have raised funds or came in with venture funding, but the majority in how SaaS Academy started was really with bootstrap founders, and they're solving a problem that they had in the field, right? They came from a different industry. They wanted to solve a problem that they had. So that's a really important perspective. But then as you start growing and have those retention, those conversations and just how people are doing business changes. And if you're not having those conversations throughout the customer life cycle, then you're going to lose touch with that. And, you know, the longer you go, then that gap gets wider and wider, and it's really, really hard then to close it. So, you know, as soon as you can start having those conversations, super important. And then Joel spoke about it earlier, right? Well, viral growth. I like to look at referrals, you know, being that third R, revenue, retention, and referrals, is how do you really find the perfect referral? I mean, I don't think that there's any better feeling or better lead, you know, or new customer, you know, than someone that's been referred by somebody else, right? And, you know, how, and then again, marketing costs are negligible usually in those situations. The sales cycle is so much faster. They're usually better customers, you know, they're ready to buy, and then you can get to that advancement a lot quicker. And so it's also, I think, an indicator of doing something right, because it's somebody's putting their reputation down on the line to refer you to someone. And again, it just brings to, this is an advocacy. This is somebody that I really trust to help you take you to your next stage of your company. So yeah, that's that in a nutshell.
Absolutely. And how do you think, or I guess what part does customer success play in this? So that's when we kind of tie back in those human beings into this overall product-led growth. How do we leverage them?
Yeah, well, customer success is throughout this whole model. I mean, one, I think customer success should actually help sync the entire organization. I think sometimes, like, we'll talk about the six core areas of SaaS company being product, engineering, marketing, sales, customer success, then operations. So it's almost at the end, but it really, in my opinion, should be almost upfront, right? Because we start with the customers of the problem that we want to solve, and then that leads to product. But it really, you know, product and customer success should really create that alignment and that accountability, right? Of, you know, why are we even doing this? Who are we doing this for? And I think the companies that that do this well, they just operate so much more efficiently, because it's very, very clear, right? They're not building for building's sake. They're not being reactive to what's coming in through support. but and they're really driving the conversation for that additional revenue. You know, renewal revenue is, you know, 50, say, you know, for every dollar spent in revenue gain is 15 cents versus $1.34 for new customers. So that's a massive spread. You know, there's huge value there in just selling to the customers that you already have. So they really need to be part of really the organizational structure and design versus just even one piece, just like product like growth. If that's the initiative, right? If that's the goal, then also customer success needs to be part of that as far as driving that strategy and that vision.
Right. That makes sense. So now that we've kind of walked through this process of setting up all of these elements of the entire customer journey in the best way to drive more revenue, to drive more retention, where do you see people getting this right? Or what companies do you see doing all of this stuff right these days?
Jill, do you want to start or I'll jump in? I mean, I think the ones that are doing it right, I think looking at product-led growth and really customers, right, as that growth engine is, and really identifying that, you know, Ash Moria years ago said, right, fall in love with the problem, not the solution, right? And that's, and as our customers grow, the problems continue, they change, they shift, right? And so those that can stay true to that, I think, you know, it's never easy, but it's easier. And so I think that they can, those that also are able to do that, they're very surgical with who their perfect fit customer is. And that customer can, change. It can either, but if they start with the one and build the flywheel around it first and then move on to the next one, that expansion is just going to go so much smoother from there as well. And really those that build models that are more flexible versus plans also tend to get this right a lot easier as well. Plans, you know, fall apart a lot easier. They're a lot more inflexible, where models, you have a model of thinking and a frame of reference that then you can really mass customize, but not customize in the way of like we think about product nice. Customization, but really customize like the success and the touch points and what the customer actually needs, regardless of their account size or their spend. But, you know, really, again, based on what is the customer truly trying to achieve in their organization to really advance, you know, the work that they want to do in the world.
Very cool. And Joel, what do you see in the customers that are doing it right? Or the companies that are doing it right?
Yeah. You know, it just kind of comes back. Great design, continuous discovery of the customer goals and always understanding how the product is fitting the customer's life. Really strong focus on implementing those viral loops into the product. How shareable is it? Is the value, does it create a network effect, right? Like the more people, the better sort of thing. How awesome am I as my product at accruing, at helping people accrue benefits? And how sticky am I making it by making it really tough to switch away, and keeping my customers happy? So all of those things work together. And I think if you look at any of the great, most of the products that are in our lives are product-led. Mm-hmm. Zoom, Slack, Calendly, all of these, most of the products that we interact with every day are product-led, and they are the models that we should adopt. And that's how they're doing it. That design does not take a back seat. They understand their customers and their stories and their narrative, and they know their numbers and how those numbers support that narrative, and they're always evolving enriching their experience, the experience of their product, to deliver value for customers.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a perfect place to wrap it up. We've kind of walked through what's going wrong when people are kind of attempting product-led growth, how they can actually build out that entire most effective customer journey, and then what that actually looks like when you're doing it right. If people want to learn more from either of you guys, Joel, Vanessa, if they want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
So the best place is to check out SaaS Academy. So sasacademy.com. And definitely invite everyone to book in a growth session. And you can do that at sasacademy.com/scale-down. So yeah.
Awesome. I'll make sure to include that in the show notes so that everyone has access to that link as well, whether they're listening to us right now or whether they're reading the blog, anything like that. And yeah, just a little recap on what your kind of specialties are. Joel, if someone comes to you, what do they come to you for?
Yeah. So I'm the product guy. I love product design, product management. Those are my life passions. I've never had a real job. So entrepreneurship's right at the end. So I've 18 years into my career, had a few SaaS products, but I've also built several agencies, just sold my last agency, signed the papers just a couple, about a month ago, nice. And starting Congrats. A new one now. Thank you. So when we're talking about product, I'm everything about it. Product design.
Very management. Cool.
I love it. That's my stuff. Awesome.
And Vanessa, when people want to come to you, what do they come to you for?
So overall strategy. So I'm the lead strategic coach. I'd say the majority of the work that I do is around positioning, really diving down into finding that perfect fit customer so we can really support scale velocity, have a whole model around that. Even those that come in, especially from a marketing or sales background, they're like, we really know our customer. Usually there's some pretty big unlocks and then they don't realize that they haven't gone deep enough for that. And once they're able to do that, then everything, whether it's marketing, sales, customer success, you know, product, you know, what, as I mentioned before, you know, what to focus on next becomes much, much clearer. And then definitely on the customer success, like how to really create moments of value. Remember that, you know, we are trying to create transformational experiences, not just transactional, and you know, where can we see the gaps? And really looking at, I like to bring in outside of SaaS experiences of saying, you know, what is the education, what's the entertainment, the escape, the aesthetic of this entire experience that we're trying to create amongst all these humans on this planet, and try to close a lot of those gaps. Sometimes they're just right in front of us, but we don't see them. So I work with founders in order to do that.
Awesome.
You're so amazing. Well, thank you. You're so amazing, Vanessa.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you so much, Joel and Vanessa, for joining us on this episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. It was a real pleasure having you. I'll make sure everyone is pointed in your direction with that information that you guys have shared. And thank you so much to all of you for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Vanessa and Joel joining us and sharing the ins and outs of just how to get it all right when it comes to predictable revenue. We'll catch you next time.